handle the truth.
Should we or should we not follow the advice of the galactically stupid?
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
You're all a bunch of fucking assholes. You know why? You don't have the guts to be what you want to be. You need people like me. You need people like me so you can point your fucking fingers and say, that's the bad guy.
Clearly, don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No. I am the one who knocks.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Righteous Prick Podcast. I'm your host, J.L. Covan. It is 8:26 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, July 14th in the year of our Lord, 2020. Here we are, folks, another episode, and I promised myself and some fans that I would be more upbeat this episode, that I wouldn't mention she who shall not be named. I'm kidding. No, it's fine. Yeah, we're going to try and have an upbeat episode, and I think, you know, I've been up for a few hours, had my cup of coffee. Coffee ran right through me, so I'm feeling like a fresh new man right now. I've lost 16 pounds in the last 2 weeks since starting my keto diet. You know, and I've learned, as I wrote on Twitter, I've learned that I don't actually like reading or watching TV or watching movies or playing video games or doing really anything. I just like activities I can do while I eat snack foods. And when you eliminate the snack foods, you know, it's so sad to just be like, well, I'm gonna have a spoonful of this almond butter to treat myself. It's a sad life, but you realize how dependent you are chemically and mentally on food as a crutch. So hopefully I emerge from this stronger and better and more empowered and less likely to die of diabetes. Wilford Brimley. So, diet's going well so far. It is a struggle, but it's because I like shitty food. I like cookies. Cookies are so good, but that's not the worst part, because I can definitely make, and by I mean my girlfriend, make like paleo sort of friendly snacks, you know, like cookies with almond flour and shit like that, that will act as a solid substitute. So it's not so much that, but you know, when I'm watching a movie, or we're so conditioned now, when I watch a movie and I don't have a snack, and I'm sorry, I did have a snack. I had guacamole with carrot sticks, shotgun blast to the face, which is so sad also, because I'm going, this tastes okay. It's better than I thought, but you know, it'd be even better, salty chips with this guacamole. So yes, I've lost 16 pounds. I think that's probably most of the easy garbage water weight, early weight loss kind of shit. But I'm going to try and stick with this for not as hardcore. I'm going to try and stick with the keto diet for a month and then maybe go paleo for the month after. So basically just the same shit, but incorporating more fruits like apples and stuff that aren't on the keto diet. It's only berries on the keto diet. And once again, I'm not doing this because, you know, obviously my vanity has suffered over the last few years, because I used to be fucking jacked and athletic and could eat anything I wanted, like a lot of people. But obviously I was a college athlete and I was ripped until I was about 31. And then I didn't have a job because I was trying to be a comedian full time and I had all the free time. And I remember my thinking then was like, oh my God, I don't have to do anything except sit here, write some jokes, go to the gym for 3 hours, bro, get swole, get ripped, go do some shows at night, and then it's on like Donkey Kong. And instead, what I would do is I would, and it's, this is well chronicled. This journey is well chronicled on my, probably my masterpiece, My Godfather, Keep My Enemies Closer. The first few tracks are about me getting fat. That album was 7 years ago, and we're still fighting this battle today. But yeah, just go buy it or stream it, I guess. Nobody buys shit, but that album, anybody who's a fan of mine has to at least listen, if not own. They should own if they're real fans. But Thoughts and Prayers and Keep My Enemies Closer. The whole catalog that I have, I am proud of and stand behind every piece of content I've created. And my albums are all give me pride and joy. But Keep My Enemies Closer and Thoughts and Prayers are just, if you're a fan of mine, you've got to have those. And this isn't really a sales pitch. It's just like, it's me trying to convince myself that there are real stand-up fans among my fan base, because those are the two that I put up against anything anyone's made, against the big boys, against the famous people. Those are the two albums that if I was famous, I believe would be Grammy-nominated level shit. So anyway, there's a little sales pitch. But the ego, you know, is killing me that I'm not jacked anymore, and then I'm like, you know, just constantly sort of sore. I get out of bed, my back and knees just sort of ache like I'm an old NFL lineman, which the sad thing is, I'm not an old NFL lineman, as you may know. I'm just a guy who does comedy and ate himself into ex-NFL player shape. So we're glad that we've lost 16 pounds, and by we, I mean me and my man breasts, but now the hard work comes where I have to kind of maintain and create good habits, which are tough because most of my favorite habits involve cookies with a side of cheesecake followed up by, a delicious hamburger and fries. And I have to sort of keep away from that because my knee, the real reason I did this was sort of preventative medicine. And I got scared of COVID, to be honest. I was watching, I think it was one of the last episodes of Bill Maher before he went on vacation, and he had a doctor on. And it's sort of self-fulfilling stuff. Bill Maher sometimes likes to have professionals on, not in his panel, but when he has professionals on to sort of back up what he thinks. But I don't think he was wrong in this case. They were talking about how obviously people with obese people and people with diminished immunodefenses are the ones who are, dying at a much, much higher rate. And the doctor that he had on was basically saying, hey, you can change your gut and like your sort of immunity in as little as 6 to 8 weeks if you really change up your diet, what you're eating, what you're putting into your system, do some light exercise. And since I wasn't exercising at all, I've been going for nice walks in the sun, getting a solid tan, or as some people on YouTube have called it, blackface. Going for good walks in the sun, sweating it out a little bit before I get back to working out. But my knee was killing me. And I thought the dual threat of like a bum knee becoming chronic and having a compromised immune system because I've been lethargic and eating garbage for the last 2 months to 6 years kind of made me a little nervous and want to nip things in the bud before I go for my checkup and get told I have something. So I'm going to try and keep this up for a few months, if not for a long time. And part of me wants to lose enough weight. And in 2021, I'm sort of a goal of my, I love meat so much. I love a good steak. I like chicken. I like salmon and shrimp. So I don't know if I can go vegan, but the more I read, and this isn't me just saying, oh, I saw this horrible video or I'm trying to be cool, but man, the more I read, I'm not talking about health. This is separate discussion. So basically I want to get healthy so that, if I have to go back to work in the next couple of months, stop working from home and go into the office, that I can feel more confident that I'm closer to my 30-year-old healthy self than a 50-year-old who's, a threat to die of COVID. So I'm trying to change my system that way. My knee is feeling better since the diet I'm on is obviously highly anti-inflammatory and I've lost 16 pounds. So I'm not ready to go back to running yet, but it is good that the knee is starting to feel better when I get up in the morning. So that's good. That's the thing. That was the doctor on Bill Maher was basically saying, a lot of, and Bill Maher always talks about this and it kind of hit me, medicine, the medical field in this country is largely not preventative. It's curing what we have, but we don't talk and do enough to make sure that we don't get sick. So hopefully I'm on the right path and can stay on it. And without any road work for a couple of months, that's what's tripped me up in the past. In the past, it's been, oh, I ate healthy for 2 months. Oh, I got three weeks of road work coming up in July. And then it's like, great show. Don't mind if I do. Hotel snack bar. And then, you know, I'm sitting there at midnight with a dual screen of pornography and CNN. And just eating some soft batch cookies right before bed. And then you wake up the next morning and go, you know what? I could have a Raisin Bran or oatmeal or some eggs and black coffee. But that waffle iron is sitting right there looking all lonely. And then you have a nice syrupy waffle. And then you go, all right, I read for an hour and I reviewed last night's set. What's playing at the movie theater? Let's go see a movie. And don't mind if I do, large popcorn and cherry Coke. And then next thing you know, you've begun the unraveling of the good work you've done. And then you're on a flight, an early morning flight, and you go, just give me a fucking donut. I got to get some sugar in me. And then you get home and you're like, all right, let me have a nice meal tonight. But you're eating crap. Let's go to the bagel store. And then next thing you know, 4 days later, you're back on the road. And then July turns into a nightmare for your diet. And you have to decide whether you want, you know, it's like the start and stop with COVID. It's like if you don't do it right and do it to completion, you're just going to be going back and forth. That's right. A lesson from Covan's body on COVID, the disease. This is the kind of sharp meta-analysis you get from this podcast. So I already cut myself off. I went back to Bill Maher, but yes, preventative, this and that. But yeah, it's not about ego right now. I'll get back to the ego portion once I feel better and I'll start lifting and really trying to get fit and running when I can, when I feel like my knee is safe to run. But the point is, we're trying to get healthy here, because 41, it's no longer to me about, you know, I'm 6'7". I started this at 302, and I'm now 286. I need to be, at my muscle level, I need to be in the low 230s. Like, I used to be in the 230s with a lot of muscle. I'm willing to compromise and say, if I'm 235 at my current, you know, I'll look fine and I'll be healthy. But yeah, you get nervous. You know, 6'7", 300 is not nothing to play with in your 40s. You know, I think of Patrice O'Neal, who was a big man, died at 41. I don't have the belly that he had, and maybe my habits aren't as bad as his, but I don't think my eating habits have been particularly good at all. So, you know, I've made jokes about the only way I'll join Patrice O'Neal and Greg Giraldo is if I die in my early 40s. I don't want that to happen. I want to join them better late than never as a comedy star and a stand-up with chops and something to say, not as somebody taken in their early 40s. Not that I've gotten any bad medical news, folks. I'm saying I'm doing this to prevent bad medical news. So let's keep going. Let's keep going on this diet and see where it takes us. And hopefully by December, I'm doing like a Jared from Subway, and I don't mean molesting kids. I mean holding up a big pair of fat khakis and going, then I can finally do my sketch. I've always wanted to grow out my hair, but I have to do it when I'm pale and when my hair's longer and with my glasses. But I want to do a sketch, and maybe this will be for my sketch show if I ever get one, which is called Jared Gets Out of Prison. And it's a very dark sketch. A lot of the sketches I think of are dark and I think very funny, but yes, going to offend some people. But just Jared Fogle, jacked. Like, imagine Jared Fogle, I've joked about this on stage, is just hitting the weights hardcore in prison and leaves prison like 210 of muscle. And then he shows up at your local park looking at your kid like, what are you going to do? Are you going to throw hands with him? He's no longer the doughy Subway guy. Now he's a jack dude looking for some tween puss. So, oh, that's so awful. Okay. So I said I was going to be more upbeat this episode. Hopefully this already feels that way. I will say one fan was very complimentary on Twitter, said, I love your stuff, especially this. And they said, you know, it's either going to happen for you or not, but don't turn the podcast into some, it's hard to listen to a 45 minute wine session. Now, I will defend myself partly there, which is this podcast is basically the only safe space I have left. I know that most people don't give a shit about stand-up and certainly don't give a shit about me speaking in my own voice. Thank you to all those who've joined, and thank you to my longtime suffering loyal listeners. But the only thing I've, and I get that, but this is the only place where I sort of feel like I'm not going to get the random comment from somebody going, hey, why can't you be nice? Or, hey, why can't we like everything? I can actually express in fuller terms than a tweet, you know, how I feel about comedy in general and how I, you know, how my inner thoughts about where my career is going and how it's being treated. I get that sometimes it can be a little much and I can go on for too long. I appreciate that. But the one thing I would object to is the person had said, and people have said this to me before, they're like, well, you do have, you know, a law career to fall back on, so it's not that bad. And that's the thing that I don't like hearing. And the only reason I don't like hearing that is because I feel like it sort of diminishes what I'm after. Like, just because I can do other things doesn't minimize at all the deep personal desire to have a comedy career. I don't care if you're somebody living week to week, day to day, or if you have a backup job like me. Nobody wants a career in comedy more than me. Plenty of people maybe want it as badly, but nobody has said, you know, I've always said, it's nice that I can fall back on a law degree, but what about the fact that I've already sacrificed over $1 million probably in earnings just from doing regular law jobs, working the kind of job I have now for a decade? I passed up on all that security, those health benefits that I had to pay out myself, a six-figure salary year after year, because I wanted the flexibility. I believed in my comedy enough to not go for that stability and sacrifice the flexibility to do as many gigs as possible, to make sketches, paying money to have editors do sketches when I was living, you know, when I was living month to month. This isn't a sad story. I'm fine. I was fine, but I was making financial and career sacrifices to pursue this. So it can be like, well, you can always go be a lawyer. And it's like, yeah, and I also already passed up more money than a lot of comics could have to pursue comedy. So there has been sacrifice and there has been, you know, and I want it as badly as anybody can want something. So it's not to say I'm not in fear of being homeless. I'm in fear of not being a professional comedian who gets to do this for the rest of their life. And that is a powerful fear and a powerful motivator. So I understand what somebody's saying when they say, but you can always back up. Yeah, no, I'm not. My fear and my anger doesn't come from, I'm going to be homeless if this doesn't work out. That's not my motivation. That's desperation. And maybe I don't have desperation, but I have as much motivation and desire as anybody can possibly have to make it in this. And I think I've proven that with the sacrifices I've made and the work I've put in. That's all I'm saying. Let's talk about two things. I want to talk about the show Yellowstone, which I talked about a few weeks ago on the podcast. It's created and written by Taylor Sheridan, a 2-time Oscar nominee. I own 3 of his movies on Blu-ray. Sicario, Hell or High Water, which was my number one movie of 2016. I love that movie. And Wind River, which is also a really, really, really good movie. So I recommend all three. Highly. I recommend all three highly. But so this is obviously somebody of talent, or this writer, and then he has this show on Paramount Network, which used to be Spike, but I guess when they didn't want to be thought of as like a Red Bull MMA network anymore, they changed their name to a studio name. So Paramount Network, the big show, their big flagship show is Yellowstone, which is written and created by Taylor Sheridan, and starring Kevin Costner. So they got big A-list talent, to lead the show. So I was excited to watch it. I didn't watch it from the beginning because I didn't know it was Taylor Sheridan. I was like, oh, Kevin Costner's doing a show. You know, I'm fine with Kevin Costner, but I'm not like Kevin Costner. Blah. You know, Kevin Costner's fine, but it wasn't enough for me to go, yeah, let me check out that Kevin Costner show. Now, had they promoted it as a Taylor Sheridan show, or if I'd seen his name over the posters and commercials, you know, then I would have said, oh shit, I'm fucking watching that. So then I found out, and they ran a Mother's Day marathon and a Father's Day marathon of Yellowstone. Season 1 on Mother's Day, which if you've seen the show or when you hear me describe it, you'll be like, weird choice for a marathon of this show, unless it's for all the dads who don't want to be around their wives or all the kids who hate their moms. Maybe it's that kind of show. And then Father's Day was a season two marathon, followed by the season premiere of season three. So earlier this week, I finished season two. I said I was going to give up on the show, but I said, let's do it. And my girlfriend has the kind of, we started something, let's finish it. Even if I don't like it, I quit shows. There's so much content that now I give a show, unless it's an HBO show, because I was going to quit Watchmen. I was kind of annoyed with Watchmen for the first five episodes, and I stuck with it out of faith in HBO, and I'm glad I did. Whereas Treme, I remember I watched the full first season of Treme and was like, well, I wish I hadn't done that. That bored me to fucking tears. But usually I give a show 3 to 4 episodes. I feel like that's enough to judge. So I gave Yellowstone like a handful of episodes, and I was like, I don't know about this fucking show. It's kind of annoying. But she wanted to continue watching it, so I said, okay, let's give it a season or two. And I said, after two seasons, I said, okay, I'm not watching anymore. I just don't think it's actually that strong a show, which was disappointing because, but as I've said, I think I said this in the past episode, but there's a few problems with it. But the main thing I learned from Yellowstone is it's a perfect example to me of if you want to talk about why representation matters, not in sort of a slogany way, but in a real substantive, studied way. Now, Taylor Sheridan is an amazing writer, clearly. Two of those three movies I mentioned were nominated for Best Original Screenplay. They're great movies. They're also very man-centered. Like the two women out of those three movies, the roles of women in Sicario is Emily Blunt. She's like a badass, tough agent, almost like a character that could be male, but they cast a woman, which is great. That's good in terms of representation and being like, hey, if it does, just the same way with racial stuff, if it doesn't have to be a white man, look at everybody to play the role. But I felt like it was sort of almost a gender neutral warrior type role. And there's positives to portraying it as one, but it's not like the role was so deeply woman-centered that you say, wow, this guy really gets women. Hell or High Water is just two brothers being chased by two police officers. Amazing movie, but it's as masculine a movie as can be and male-centered. And then Wind River, the two main female characters, one is a dead woman, in the role of, sort of victim driving the story, but she's not really featured much in the movie. And even though she's a driving plot point, and a female detective who is, I need to watch the movie again. I don't want to speak on that, but I don't, a little softer of a feminine role is played by Elizabeth Olsen. But that's it. So they're male driven stories. They're wilderness, wild west kind of, Texas, Wyoming, kind of cowboy, old America, like frontier type shit set in the modern world. Like all his shit is like kind of No Country for Old Men, which is obviously a great movie, Best Picture winner, but it's obviously, it's all men. It's all male driven. It's of that ilk. And that's fine. Like, I'm not complaining about that. He clearly knows that world. He loves that world, and he writes it really well. Until we get to Yellowstone. Now, Yellowstone is male-driven, and the women roles are sort of, it became sort of too obvious to ignore, and it makes you realize maybe he has blind spots, but he wrote and directed every episode in season one. He's written every episode of the show. So it's him and him alone, and obviously for Paramount to get somebody like Taylor Sheridan on the payroll to do a flagship sort of show, I'm sure they had to pay top dollar and give him total creative control for him to work that hard. Cause writing and directing 10 episodes, I'm sure is a fucking boatload of work. It's all consuming, I'm sure. And then to do, another 10 episodes, although he got other directors for those. But I think sometimes it's the way I feel about the movie Molly's Game, which I know some people love. I thought it was good. I didn't think it was great. And my main problem with Molly's Game, which is on Netflix, I believe. It stars Jessica Chastain, about a woman who ran like a private gambling ring. My problem with it was I felt it was too long, and Aaron Sorkin, as amazing a writer as he is, he also directed the movie. And I felt like Aaron Sorkin probably needs, he believes in his talent for good reason. He's one of the great screenwriters. But he probably needs somebody to check him and to edit him and to like somebody of equal stature, whether it's a David Fincher in The Social Network or Rob Reiner, A Few Good Men, to name some of Sorkin's scripts, to push back or to make decisions from their perspective instead of giving carte blanche. Because if you're a writer like Aaron Sorkin and you write a 2.5 hour movie, you're going to love all 2.5 hours of your movie. But maybe somebody says this really should be 2:10. And that's how I felt about Molly's Game. I felt like it was like Sorkin had too much power. Not that he doesn't deserve the power and respect he has, but somebody of equal stature might have said, this really should be a little shorter. You can cut this. You can do this. Because a writer is going to love, you know, his own words for good reason, especially when he's a great writer. And with this show, Yellowstone, I'm watching it, and the female characters are, and I'm not exaggerating, and spoiler, if you're going to watch the show or if you've not caught up, but okay. So one character is the beautiful, young, Native American wife of one of the characters who's sort of in a passive role. She's there as like kind of the, you know, representing maybe the soft, kind heart of the Native people. And she's pretty, of course. Every woman in the show is fucking hot. That's, you know what I mean? Except maybe a meth head. Then you have... the sister and the sister of some of the characters and the daughter of Kevin Costner, who I talked about a couple of weeks ago, who is the super sharp business shark, but who's also a total drunk and a complete whore, but like a rough, like talks like a man, you know, the kind that a guy of like the 1980s would be like, I love her because she tells you to fuck off and sucks your dick and you have a beer with her later and she's totally damaged. So, you know, like it's, I mean, she walks around at one point naked in front of her own brother, and she, you know, of course, doesn't want a relationship because she's tougher than all the guys. And it's that simple sort of, I think the strongest character I wrote on the show is the woman. How about that? Pat on the back for macho man who respects women. But it's such a caricature. The attorney general who comes in season 2 looks like a model. In Montana, she's the attorney. She's going to be the attorney general of Montana, and she's like a 5'10 model. The governor of Montana, who's sleeping with Kevin Costner, of course, is a hot TV version of Gretchen Whitmer, the nice looking governor of Michigan. This is like the, but what if Gretchen Whitmer was smoking hot? So now we've talked about 4 women. All extremely attractive. I know it's TV, but even couldn't the attorney general have been a plain Jane at least? you don't have to go full Janet Reno, but can we go like, hey, she looks like her husband loves her and her family loves her, but she's not turning heads every time she walks down the street level. And anybody else? Oh, and then of course there was a journalist who had a smoking hot lesbian lover, who we for some reason see nipple. I didn't know you could do that on basic cable. But in season 1, there's just a, you know, she comes out of the shower and does a little side boob for the crowd. And I was like, well, sure. What, why, you know, if you're going to have a same-sex couple, it might as well entertain some of the men watching as well. So my point is, it became very sort of stark. And then in season 2, spoiler, in season 2, there is a rape of the sister. That the sister, like the sexy bitch, you know, corporate killer sister. And it became so absurd because while the guy's raping her, she's yelling at him about how terrible his dick is. And yeah, give it to me. You can't fucking satisfy shit. Yeah, and her face is all bloody. And you're like, what kind of sick fantasy of women's empowerment is this? That was the moment I said, we're finishing this season 2, but this is a fucking ridiculous show. It was stunning. I couldn't, because I was like, this guy has written such great movies. And I go, is this thought of as like empowering or that she's a strong character? You know what I mean? Like, it was just like, it was so weird. And then, of course, the guy was like going limp, I guess, because he wasn't feeling like he was dominating her. And I know the textbook thing is sex, rape is about power, not sex. And it's like, oh, she took away his power. But it's like, is any woman actually going to try that in the future? Like to act like she's not intimidated at all. And that it's not, it was so off-putting because it felt like such bad TV, in like disguised as gritty, raw TV. And it made me think. I was like, you know what? This is why when people, I think a lot of people sometimes use this as a pithy slogan for progressive values in TV when they say representation matters, get people in the writer's room. But this was a very simple, this wasn't even race-based, obviously. And I think Taylor Sheridan actually is very sensitive to sort of Native American issues. If you've seen Wind River, you see it's something he kind of makes central to the story about deaths and sexual crimes on reservations. So I think, you know, he has a heart and he has a perspective of value that isn't just white man centered. So I'm not, this isn't, but when it comes to women, it's one of those things where I go, yeah, I don't know if there are women in this writer's room, but they probably could use some, because this show is such the tough guy who thinks he's a super ally of women writing a show. So I'm not saying the intentions are bad, but that was an example where I go, oh, this is a very textbook. Like if I were teaching a course on media or entertainment, gender in media, and this is one of those ones where I'd say, you see, I think this is a show that would benefit from having several women in the writer's room. They might have seen that and gone, I know what you're doing, and I know this woman's damaged, but no, this is ridiculous. This is just coming off as porn, like some kind of righteous bro who thinks he's progressive porn or something. It was very, very off-putting, as you can imagine. It's probably been off-putting to listen to. As my voice dips into the Ron Reagan, it's been a while since I did the Ron Reagan, not afraid of burning in hell. God, I still think those commercials must have turned some atheists into Christians. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, sorry, Ron Reagan, the son of the late President Ronald Reagan, as you might have guessed, does these commercials for this atheist organization. And they're annoying commercials, in my opinion. Even if you agree, I feel like I want to know if you're an atheist and you see those commercials, don't you kind of agree that they're annoying? Because it's just a sing-songy, not afraid of burning in hell. But I think he thinks he's being like very snarky slick. And so that's my thought on Yellowstone. So watch it if you want. Maybe some of you out there are like, are you kidding me? I can't wait to watch this show. Bros in cowboy hats, chicks yelling at their rapists mid-rape. What isn't there to love about this show? But I was so disappointed, and I gave it 2 seasons out of respect for all the work Taylor Sheridan has done. And I would never tweet this at Taylor Sheridan or something, because it's like the same way I don't like it when, like, somebody watched I posted an impression reel, by the way, on my YouTube channel. And somebody wrote in a comment, and I gave it a like, and I said, fair enough. It's been 11 years since I did that impression. But they were like, I loved all your impressions except the Liam Neeson. That was off. And in my head, I'm like, I guess you can say that. There's, you know, you gave me an overall compliment. But my thought is also, you could have just said, oh, good stuff. Yeah, I get it. You give me credit. Because it's like, it's already out there. I'm not workshopping it. It is what it is. And I don't plan on using the Liam Neeson extensively. But it's a reel that I have somebody submitting stuff for, just to show that there's a wide range that I hit on different races, different people, different political entertainment, like a wide range. And I put the Liam Neeson last because I thought it was probably the weakest of all of them, but I also thought it was not bad. And if you're looking for voiceover work, they can see that I can maybe hit different registers, I guess. You know, so that's what the purpose was. But then it was like, I loved 12 of the 13 things you posted, but that last, the 13th one, very unlucky, didn't approve. I'm like, okay. I guess I'll take the compliment. But that's my point, is that I would never be like, Taylor, love your movies. Could have done better. Like, I'd never be that guy going, could have done better with Yellowstone, but love your Oscar-nominated movies. It's like, I'm sure he takes great pride in Yellowstone. And like I said, it's a big production. It's a lot of work. I just, you know, I think it could benefit from a woman's touch. So representation matters, I guess. I'm learning, guys. I'm learning. I'm growing. in this turbulent time. And now I have to find another show. I watched Hamilton on Disney Plus, which was wonderful. Not to humble brag, but I did see it orchestra seats August 2015. Okay. So not to lie, but the June 2016 recording, they looked like they were mailing it in a little bit. So just a humble brag that, you know, I think they gave it more when I saw it than when you saw it. No, it was fucking awesome. It's such an amazing, amazing work. I just think it's, God, it's so good. It's so good. And I'm as corny as I can think Lin-Manuel Miranda is sometimes, the work speaks for itself. That is just, he took a great book, a great biography by Ron Chernow, and turned it into a fucking masterpiece. Wrote the music, wrote the lyrics, you know, starred in it. It's a really amazing work. So if you haven't watched it yet, it's worth two tickets to Hamilton now will cost you like 8 years of Disney Plus subscriptions. So go subscribe for a year just for Hamilton. It's that good. It's worth every penny, despite the fact that comedian Jared Carmichael said it sucked. He, if you don't know, is the guy who did a special on HBO while reading notes off of a bar stool. And then did a second special that was very thought-provoking and generated one laugh from me in an hour. Anyway, he said Hamilton was terrible. So take that Hamilton. But speaking of my impression reel, and I'll leave you with this. So hopefully I think this has been a good, if you don't give up, I hope I made Yellowstone sound interesting. I hope my dissertation on Yellowstone was at least interesting, if not fun. But one thing that I found funny, multiple people said I should not do blackface on my impression reel because I had an Obama impression where I had some light makeup on, and most of the makeup was done to darken my eyebrows, gray the sides of my hair, and darken my lips to look like a smoker. And here's the dilemma, folks. It's so funny because I'm looking at the impression reel. Now, I filmed my Joel Osteen sketch in the summer, so I was significantly darker than Joel Osteen. And yet when I did the Obama impression, oh, by the way, just for people who don't know, and this is a dilemma that I expect to come, up again and again, and it's going to get frustrating because of the sensitive climate we're in. But I filmed the Obama sketch in like the dead of winter where I'm indoors all the time. I get very pale. I tan very easily because my fucking father was black. I tan very well. I look very good when I'm tan. If I lived in LA year round, you'd never know that I get pale. You'd just be like, that guy looks like the biggest Mexican I've ever seen. Which, thank you again to the guy who wrote to me on Twitter with a bunch of Mexican racial slurs, assuming I was an anti-Trump illegal from Mexico with a bunch of kids. At least he saw me as a person of color. Do better, people who don't throw you racial. Be as good and as perceptive as the racist who saw me as a person of color. That's all I'm saying. But I did the Obama in the dead of winter. Well, this may come as a shock. I didn't mind putting on beige makeup to play Obama if all I had to do was wait 6 months and be outside, and I would have had to put no makeup on my face except for lips, eyebrows, and hair. So it's very frustrating because people want to, and somebody was like, I know you're a good dude. I know you're a good dude. So I'm not trying to, but like, don't do this. And I was like, do what? And I wrote very nicely because maybe they don't know who I am, but I'm like, I am literally the same sort of bio, if you think about it, as Obama. Now, my father had a white grandparent, which is chronicled in my stand-up, but my dad was a bald, clearly black man, darker than Quincy Jones, I always joke, I say kind of a Morgan Freeman black. But obviously my father had white blood in his history. My mom, on the other hand, is pure blue-eyed, red-haired, pale as fuck Irish. But that's a black immigrant father and a white Irish mom. Guess what Obama was? A black immigrant father and a white Irish mom. And so it's one of those things where I go, yeah, I'm not going to apologize or feel bad for basically doing to my skin what nature and the sun would have done if I was filming in the spring or summer instead of, December or January. And I don't know. It's a bizarre time. I've spoken a lot on this, and I've done things. I don't regret. I don't think there's any piece of content I've ever made that I regret on ethical standards. I think there are some that I go, oh, I could have been better then. I've watched my Trump impression. I didn't realize this. I first did my Trump impression in 2014 for the Adam Carolla show. It sucked. It, funny enough, it sounds like a lot of the other Trump impressions that make money. And it's terrible. Now it's a fucking masterpiece, but it's funny. I mean, that, you know, it took me 6 years, I guess, or 5 years to really perfect it. And I didn't even know that I was perfecting it. I thought it was good as fuck the first time I did it. And it was better than somebody walking down the street doing Trump. But it sucks. I'm too fast. My voice isn't rough enough. The cadence isn't good enough. It's so funny. But at the time, I was like, I think I do a pretty good-ass Trump. Now I do a fucking stellar Hall of Fame Trump. But like, it's weird to look back. But I feel like this is going to happen with me a lot. But there's content that I've made that would be problematic. And then I would have to explain myself and have to say, well, I didn't think it was, you know, and Obama is part of that where I go, yeah, I'm not going to apologize for content I've made. I've made all my content I've been thinking about. I've weighed the pros and cons. I've thought about me as a person when I make the content, who I am. Does that reflect who I am? Am I quote unquote allowed to do this? And then there's that other side, which is I feel how I feel about it, and I've been thoughtful about it, and I've weighed pros and cons, and I've taken risks. The other side to that is, how will people perceive this? And until I get super famous and I'm known as a Rashida Jones, Barack Obama, mixed race person by the masses, I'm going to constantly have to answer questions of like, well, I don't think you can do that, because people will think I'm some white guy doing some racially offensive thing, which I'm not. And that, you know, I have a more permissive attitude towards comedy than a lot of people. And that includes racial portrayals. I've said Billy Crystal is Sammy Davis Jr. I'll never have a problem with it because A, I don't think Billy Crystal did it to be offensive. B, I think Billy Crystal did an incredible Sammy Davis Jr. impression. And C, it was done with professional care. I don't, and I know people will disagree with me, but I think as a half black person, I am allowed to have a valid opinion for myself. I'm not telling everybody else they have to feel that way, but if anybody asks me my opinion, that's my opinion. But the point being is, I wonder how many times this is going to come up, because I didn't even think about the Obama. Because I looked at the Obama and I said, I literally asked myself, I was like, do I have makeup on in this? I knew I had makeup on the lips, the eyebrows, the hair, but I was like, do I have makeup, or is that? I've had people accuse me of doing blackface and having an orange tan this summer when they've seen some of my videos, because I have a good tan going. But when I put that white eyeliner for Trump and the lips, it almost offsets it and makes my tan look more orange. And people are like, great orange tan. And I'm going, that's just my tan. It just looks orange because of the lighting and because of the white is like creating a contrast. But yeah, I looked at the Obama impression. I was like, I think I was wearing makeup. But then, you know, and then you get into these gray areas where it's like, yeah, once people know I'm biracial and that my mix is like identical to Obama's, and that if I'd waited 6 more months, there would have been no makeup. That's, and that, you know, and then, yes, you could say, so if an Italian did it, would it be okay? And I'll be like, if the Italian wasn't wearing fucking brown makeup and like putting on red lips and talking fucking jive from Airplane, why wouldn't it be okay? Isn't that acceptable? It's somehow, you know, and I'm already fading into the gray area where I know you start to lose the progressives and gain the bigots who want to be able to do whatever they want, whenever they want. And hey, words and makeup don't hurt people. You've got to get over it, lib cuck. And I hate living in that middle space, but there it is. There's my, you know, my autobiography, Middleman. It'll be about a biracial guy who never stopped being a middle act in comedy, who stood in the middle of every photo from kindergarten through 12th grade because he was always the tallest kid, and had to straddle the middle between offending progressives who he agreed with politically and having too many conservative fans that he thought were terrible people. Middleman, coming soon from some fucking book publisher. I want to say Houghton Mifflin, but I never knew how to pronounce that one. Houghton Mifflin. And what's the big? What's the big one? Why am I flat? I'm forgetting, like, the big Schuster. Simon and Schuster. Schuster, the Schuster sisters went to my high school. They were wealthy. I think one was a, like a year or two older than me, and one was a year younger than me. Irrelevant. But yeah, that was the book publisher I was trying to think of. They're big. They're pretty big. Middleman, coming to a bookseller near you in 2039. but I guess that's it. That's just me talking about my career and like, you know, in hopefully a thoughtful, positive way, not griping about the business, just griping about, you know, all the things you have to fucking go through, which is annoying. And we'll see what happens. No, so thank you for listening, guys. This was hopefully a change of pace. I know I've been a little 2 weeks ago, I thought the fucking episode was flame emojis, but last week was pretty dreary because I was feeling dreary. And this is my safe space, guys. You guys are the ones I can depend on to let me talk through. This is like the behind the scenes podcast for like exclusive fans who give a shit. You get to hear what JL's mind is thinking. So this week I was thinking about Yellowstone and putting on biracial face. That may be my next special, which will be my first special, may be called Half Blackface, or it'll be called Covan 41. So, you know, like COVID-19. I don't know yet, but yeah, thanks for listening. And now I'm going to go have breakfast and then fall back on doing some wonderful legal work, which always brings me joy because it will stop me from being homeless. Anyway, guys, thank you for listening. Have a great week. Have a safe week. Be sure to a few things, if I can make a few plugs, if you're still listening. Remember to subscribe to the two YouTube channels, youtube.com/JL Covan and youtube.com/TrumpTheInternet, which is finally starting to pick up some real traction, which is great. So there's that. Trying to think what else. And check out Making Podcasts Great Again, my now pretty damn successful Trump podcast. So that's good. Other than that, let's just hope, you know, gigs start to flow maybe in the fall, that I start getting work and getting to do other things besides videos from my apartment and podcasts from my apartment. So I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I think that's all I have to plug. That's basically the only place where content's going up for me right now. So thank you for listening. Have a great and safe week, and I will see you next Tuesday.